Thank you. So I think for organizers for allowing me the possibility to present this talk. And what I'm going to talk about, I will try to sort of overview the activity which was going on almost for 10 years under the title, which is Integrability in High Energy QCD. And my talk is based on the work which has been done in collaboration with Andrei Belitsky, Vladimir Brown, Sergei Dergachev, Alexander Gorsky, Alexander Manashov, and Dieter Müller. And to my understanding, that two of these guys have already gave talk here, so you will have some overlapping between what they have said and what I'm going to tell you about. And what I'm going to show you, I will try to convince you that high-energy QCD possesses hidden symmetries. The symmetry is hidden in the sense that you couldn't see it at the level of the classical Lagrangian, and it will appear once you start talking about quantum correctness, at least one loop level, and sometimes you need multicolor limit, and others you don't need. I will try to specify on which limit you do need and when you don't need. And moreover, what I'm going to show you is that this hidden integrability appeared in two completely different problems. One of the problems has to do with so-called regi asymptotic behavior of scattering amplitude, about which we just have heard yesterday. And second problem has to do with problem of finding scale dependent of special objects which are called distribution amplitudes. But before I will come to specifying what I mean by this, let me just make a few remarks. The first remark, then what I'm going to talk about, the relation between QCD and integrable models. And when I will be talking about integrable models, I will mean essentially the same models we have heard this morning, namely quantum mechanical models with finite number of degrees of freedom. And these models are integrable both classically and quantum level, because one could present certain hidden conserved charges whose number is equal to the number of degrees of freedom. And then we're talking about gauge theory and QCD's peculiar example. In four dimensions, there is no way you could match QCD into quantum mechanical model simply because number of degrees of freedom doesn't match. And the way out is to realize that once you go to a very specific limit, either high energy limit or light cone limit, what we're talking about, it's not QCD, but sort of effective limit of QCD. And once you go to special kinematical limits, you will find that certain degrees of freedom will decouple. And after that, you will be talking about effective dynamics of some reduced degrees of freedom. It will be that dynamic which will be integrable. And just to give you a hint how integrability has been discovered, here is two examples. Roughly speaking, 30 years ago, people started to look for high energy behavior scattering amplitude in QCD, and they realized that there is a certain self-consistent framework which goes under the name of BFKL, and we also heard about yesterday, which allows you to sum up certain number of correction to come up with certain prediction which tells you that in certain limit scattering amplitude grows the power. And this power is given by this expression where you have a strong coupling constant, and here you have certain combination containing special function, which is just psi function. A psi function, I recall you, it's logarithmic derivative of gamma function. Also, approximately the same time, people were trying to calculate the anomalous dimension of certain operator in QCD, and the main motivation for that was because this operator, knowing anomalous dimension of this operator, will be allowed to predict the scaling, the violation from scaling of structure function in diplomatic scattering. And then if you're talking about different variety of operators, there's special operators, for example, operator like this, when you have quark and quark operators, and here the arrow shows that this quark operators are not just a quark operator. The quark operator is definite helicity and helicity align. You could find the anomalous dimension of one loop, which is given by this expression, which contains more of the same function. And then for some people who know a bit about Landau school, you could sort of apply Landau paradigm. So once you found that some new function appearing here, there should be signal for something. And what I'm going to show you is a signal of integrability. Another way, every time you have psi function, just strong indications you're talking about integrable model, and not integrable model, but a very special model, namely Geisenberg spin chain. I will just come to this spin chain in a second, but let me first sort of make general comment that QCD is the least supersymmetric theory. So the question arises, what will happen if you start putting supersymmetry? It's more or less natural to expect that this would make any harm for integrability. So what supersymmetry does, it just enhances integrability. But I will not say anything about supersymmetric theories. Namely, I will be talking namely only about QCD. So to start with, let me just tell you what's called Geisenberg spin chains. And we have seen already definition in previous talks, therefore I will be very brief. So this model has been introduced long ago by Heisenberg as an attempt to describe sort of system model of atoms with exchange spin interaction. And this is just the famous Geisenberg-Hamiltonian, describing iteration of spin 1/2 located in the sides of one-dimensional lattice of size L. And then apparently this model turned out to be integrable in the sense that it possesses hidden set of integral motion, and it has been solved by the beta, by the method, but nowadays it's called beta and that. So then people were studying these models in different framework, and what happened around 81, the people realized that you could generalize this model in a very special way. Namely, you go from spin 1/2 to arbitrary higher spin SU2 or even SL2 generators, and when you generalize it, you require that the resulting Hamiltonian should be integrable. So you generalize in the way that the integrability is preserved. And once you do this, you end up in the following expression, which again has the same structure, pairwise interaction, nearest neighbors interaction between the spin, with the only difference that now these two particle spins are just spins corresponding to the symmetry group which you choose here. And this function h is just a very special function which is given in terms of the same psi function we have seen in a moment. So that is just the way how you define integrable spin chain, and then you just compare the expression you have from QCD, and you measure them into this expression, and you just see whether the psi function is the same or not the same. And it was in this way that integrable structures had been found in QCD almost 10 years ago. So the first case has to do with QCD and the radial limit. So when you go to radial limit, as I will show you in 10 minutes, you will see that there's some simplification after which you will end up with a spin chain, which is a very special spin chain, SL2C spin chain. Namely, spins which are sitting here will be generators, a very special presentation of this group. So if you go QCD on the light cone, when we're talking about distribution amplitude, you will find that similar spin chain appears with the only difference that here you will have SL2R group. So recently there was another interesting observation, which I called by accidental, but obviously it is not accidental, that you could find for certain class of the operators in QCD that very nice structure appearance which has to do with XXX and XZ spin chains with the group being SU2. And I think in the first talk this spin chain has been mentioned. So once you start talking about matching on quantum mechanical models on field theory, you have to specify what you mean by the time. So what you mean by the time on the quantum mechanical side, and field theory point of view, which are the logarithms of the relevant energy scale. So if you're talking about radial limit, the relevant energy scale is just energy center of mass energy, therefore the time will be some log of S. If you're talking about QCD on the light cone, you're talking about logarithm normalization point, and it will be evolution in these two parameters, which will give rise to integrable model. So let's start first with a simplest example, namely, we're going to consider so-called multi-particle operator in QCD on the light cone. And the natural framework for discussing this object just to consider so-called hard process in QCD. Namely, you're talking about process in which you have header participating in the collision, and the collision has So this header has very high energy, and it's probed by very virtual probe, let's say virtual photon. In this situation, we know that appropriate framework to discuss the hadron is Spartan model. So you consider this hadron as constructed out of the partons, and once you boost the system into the momentum frame, you could think about this hadron as a bunch of almost quasi-free partons. Each of them has certain momentum fraction, so that the sum equal to one, each momentum fraction is positive, and all these partons are propagating along the light cone and have almost zero transverse separation. So the object we describe, this is not P2-body object in QCD, it's called baryon general distribution amplitude. What I'm going to show you here is just a special example which corresponds to baryon distribution amplitude. So if you're talking about baryon distribution amplitude, here we're talking about baryons built out of three quarks. And then if you're thinking about this configuration, there are two dual descriptions of this configuration. For one hand side, you could consider this configuration as a collection of C-plane waves which are propagating along the light front. And this way you're just writing a combination of plane waves with certain coefficients, which are distribution amplitude. On the other hand side, if you're talking about particle interpretation, you could identify this object as like three quarks located on the light front. So this vector n is light-like in the coordinate z1, z2, and z3. Define the position of these three quark operators on the light front. So there's just two descriptions of the same object. And then if you know how to calculate such object in the P2-body of QCD, you will be able, using this relation, to reconstruct this function. At present, we are not able to do this. So the only thing that you could do, we could control the dependence of this function at normalization point. So the dependence on mu of these functions from this point of view comes from the fact that these operators are highly singular. Since all quarks located in the light cone, separation between each pair is light-like, and this creates additional singularity which you'd like to renormalize. And what we will see just in a second, it will be just dependence on this parameter mu, which gives rise to integrable model. So how to study normalization of this object? There are two ways. One way you could just treat it as a non-local operator, but conventional way, you would like to avoid non-locality here, and what you do is just expanding this object in powers of z's. In this way, you go from the function to its moment. So you go from the function, which depends on the momentum fraction, to some moments which depend on integers ki, and then these moments are expressed in terms of the operator, which is just a local operator containing quark fields with arbitrary number of covariant derivatives applied along them, with Lorentz indices oriented along the light cone. So this is just the operator which people are discussing in supermetric theories, but in this particular content, we're just talking about the same operator in QCD. And so we'd like to understand what are the anomalous dimensions of such object. So as usual, this operator will mix with each other, and you have to calculate the missing matrix. So you apply this normalization group operator to these moments, you come up with the mixing matrix. And what you realize is that since here you have three quarks, this mixing matrix will be quite large size. So once you start increasing this lattice k, you will see this matrix size will grow bigger and bigger. Still, there's nothing wrong with this. You could just calculate eigenvalues of this matrix by brute force, and then all of a sudden you will see that some beautiful structure will emerge. Namely, let's consider the special case of the operator when you have three quarks with a helicity 1/2. So you're talking about Bayesian state with total helicity 3/2. And then what you do is just diagonalizing mixing matrix with n being total number of derivatives entering the definition of the operator. Then what you will see is that when you diagonalize just this matrix numerically, some nice structure emerge. A priori, you have this mixing matrix which has awful form and huge size. And then when you diagonalize it, you see that structures are nice. Therefore, you ask the question, where it comes from? And what I'm going to argue just in a second, that this structure is consequence of two facts. First of all, we have conformal symmetry, and the top of conformal symmetry, we have additional property with just integrability. Let me start first with conformal symmetry. So if you're talking about QCD Lagrangian, bare QCD Lagrangian, you know that it's invariant on the SO4,2 conformal transformations. So once you go to quantum level, we know the conformal symmetry of QCD is broken by conformal anomaly. Still, there is observation which goes back to the Molochikov that once we're talking about one loop anomalous dimension don't care about conformal anomaly. Therefore, at the level of one loop anomalous dimension, conformal symmetry preserved. Another observation that we're not talking about just arbitrary operators. Our quark operators are located in the light cone, and therefore, what's relevant for us is not the full conformal group, but it's a group which acts only in the light cone. And on the light cone, full conformal group reduced just to this SL2R collinear subgroup. And then once you realize this, then you could classify all your fundamental fields, for example, quark in this case, with respect to representation of this group. So once you perform conformal transformation on the light cone, with just projective transformation, quark field transforms like this, with JQ being some parameter intrinsically property of the quark field. So generators of this transformation are just conventional SL2 generators. So these generators generate translations along the Lycon. This guy generates dilatations, and this guy special conformal transformations. So again, let me just point out that this number JQ is just intrinsic feature of the quark field, and just one for quark field. It's 3/2 for gluon field, for example. So what we do next, you would like to understand how conformal symmetry manifests itself as the normalization properties of this quark operators. And for this purpose, it's more convenient to deal with non-local operators. I don't want to deal with local operators. I want to consider this operator B, Z1, Z2, Z3 as generating function of local operators, and I want to treat it as a whole, and not like expansion local operators. Then what it could show is that after you apply normalization group flow to this operator, what will happen, you will get the same operator back, with only difference that these arguments Z1, Z2 will be shifted along the light cone, and the weight, how it's shifted, is driven by this operator H. So this operator H gives you realization of the dilatation operator, of one loop dilatation operator in QCD on the space of this particular operator. And then if you want to calculate this operator, just put three quark on the light cone, and you just write one loop diagram. For example, in the axial gauge, these are just the only diagram you could imagine, modulus of energy correction, which are more or less trivial, I don't include them here. So for example, here you have single gluon exchange between quark 1 and 2, 2 and 3, and 1 and 3. As then it turned out that this, if you calculate this diagram and separate ultraviolet divergent piece, you will find that this diagram defined a very special kernel, H12, which has a very simple physical interpretation. Namely, this gluon just shifts quark number 1 and number 2 along the light cone. And here is just the exact definition how it shifts. So you have here Z1 minus alpha, Z1 minus Z2, and here you have Z2 plus alpha, Z1, Z2. So this guy here, what it does, it just deplates quarks and with number 1 and 2 in direction which has along the light cone. And this is just a very simple intuitive picture of renormalization. At the normalization, quarks start to attract each other. And again, since we know that there is conformal invariance should be present at one loop level, it's as a consequence of this, you have to check this operator H commutes with generators of the collinear subgroup. And that, in fact, it does. And then if it commutes with generators of the conformal group acting on all three quarks, it should be a function of total Casimir operators, which translate to the fact that, for example, two particle operator acting on quark with indices J and K should be function of corresponding to particle spin of general JK. So now the question is how to find this function. So once you have the specific form of the operator, it's just a question of a few seconds to realize that this operator is just our beloved psi function. So this integral operator, which I have shown in previous transparency, is just psi function once you go to this explicit SL2 invariant form. So now, in order to calculate the anomalous dimension, what you have to do, you have to solve the Schrödinger equation. So this gamma n will define the spectrum of anomalous dimension of your baryon operator, and you saw in the transparency this nice structure. And this guy psi n, small n, will define certain operators which have autonomous scale dependence, with so-called conformal operators. So this observation was done by this gentleman, and so for you could conclude that one loop dilatation operator realized for this particular baryon operator with Filiski 3/2 is just nothing else as Hamiltonian of SL to Agassiz-Berg spin chain. So we see that the number of quark operator defines the number of sides of this spin chain. For example, in this case, just three sides. And spin operator from point of view on spin chain, just generators of the SL2 collinear subgroup. So you see the symmetry of QCD of the light cone automatically translated into a particular realization of the spin generators on spin chain side. Then what you do next, since you know that this model is integrable, you would like to construct some kind of betansatz. So there's different ways how you could construct betansatz, but there is one which is a very special one. I will explain in a second why it's special. Namely, what you do, you construct a certain function Q. So this function Q is just polynomial of certain degree in complex parameter U, and then once it's polynomial, it could parameterize by the roots. So once you have this function Q in your disposal, and I will define this function in a second, you could calculate this anomalous dimension by just this simple formula, just logarithmic derivative. So if you substitute this formula, this analysis into this formula, you will find some very nice expression containing this roots lambda k, and it's no surprise that this root lambda k would be a better root. And to see this, you require that this function Q of U should specify the following equation. And this equation is called Baxter equation. So this is a second order finite different equation on this polynomial Q of U, which on the left-hand side contains these two differences. On the right-hand side, you have certain polynomial of degree, which is equal to the number of quark operators, with some coefficient Q2 and Q3, which are those conserved charges that you should identify on spin chain side. So this parameter JQ is just conformal spin of the quark. So what's the reason why I wrote the formula in this form and not in the conventional form? The reason being that, as we will see just in a few minutes, in the regi limit, we will end up with different spin chain, but miraculously, the final solution for spin chain, which will appear in the regi limit, is described by the very same equation. So finally, let me summarize what is known at present about so-called integrable zoo in Monte Carlo QCD. So you start playing with different operator, and then you observe that if you're constructing the operator out of the quark with helicity up or down and glue and helicity up and down, you will find that if operator built from the quark with the same helicity, it's integrable. So in quark and QCD are in some fundamental representation, and the only color singlet you could construct is just containing three quarks. So this is just baryon operator we discussed so far, and as we have seen, this dilatation operator acting on this baryon operator just could be mapped into closed Heisenberg spin chain of particular values of SL2 spin with just one. So you could go on and consider, for example, gluon operator built out of many glues, all of them having helicity one. Then you will find that, again, this object is integrable, and you will find the same integrable model with only difference that you have just to change the conformal spin from 1 to 3/2, because 3/2 conformal spin is a gluon field. You go on and you can see the operators which are special ones. So you have quark anti-quark fundamental representation, and you put it between gluons. So if you put gluons with all helicity up and quark helicity doesn't matter, you will discover the dilatation operator for such object is open spin chain. And the fact that gluon and quark have different conformal spin implies that this spin is homogeneous.
Are you assuming large colors here?
Thank you. So this operator here, this statement is exact for arbitrary number of colors. These two statements need to require multi-color limit. So if you go beyond multi-color limit, Or if you want to talk about operators which have mixed helicity, for example, you take this operator and you flip one of the quark helicities, you will find that this degradability symmetry is broken. Namely, you will find the dilatation operator will acquire additional contribution which will lift integrability. And this integrability, and this phenomenon of the break integrability has very profound physical meaning. Namely, what you will find after you include these terms, the spectrum of anomalous dimensions, there will be a gap. And this gap is exactly what you need to describe, for example, diquark structure for the helicity 1/2 baryon here of proton. Well, but then you realize that finite gap is just a finite amount. And then if you consider asymptotic with anomalous dimension, you remember in my plot there was sort of the band appearing. The sides of this band look like a logarithm fan. So therefore, if you're looking about anomalous dimension of, if you're talking about asymptotic behavior of the anomalous dimension for large number of derivative, for large number of conformal spin, independently which sector you're considering, you have similar phenomenon, this behavior. So you have dominated term at one loop which has log n behavior, plus terms which are not enhanced by log. And then it turns out that on non-degradability phenomena just enter here. So therefore, if you're talking about large n behavior of the anomalous dimension, these terms are relevant. Then you ask yourself, what will happen if I start going to two-loop order? I told you that integrability at one loop level was combined with conformal symmetry. So once you go beyond beyond one loop level, you have to face the problem that conformal symmetry KCD is broken, and therefore if there is integrability there, the integrability will not be the property of conformal symmetry, it will be much deeper property. And then it turns out that you go for very hard calculation for this operator to loop level, and you find integrability is there. So if you're talking about renormalization of such operator to loop level, the integrability which you observe at one loop level is there even to loop, given that beta function is different from zero. So finally, you go to large, large n limit, which means large number of derivatives. And then you will find that if what's far too interesting into log n behavior is anomalous dimension, due to the fact that integrable corrections enter here, you will find that anomalous dimension in all sector, in all gauge series, to all loops, have universal behavior. So what stands here, this is a sort of band. So you have anomalous dimension, which spans certain band, the lower size of the band scales like 2 times log n some function of some anomalous dimension depending on coupling constant, and the upper size of the band scales like the same expression with here instead of 2 you have L. So L is sort of number of so-called good fields. And what's most trivial in this expression is this function. This function is known as Kasper anomalous dimension rules a loop. And having said that, this is just an perturbative definition of this function. So what we know about this function in QCD, we know first 3 terms in its perturbative expansion. For n equal 4 theory, you know this function both as weak and strong coupling expansion. So this is the end of the story about QCD on the light cone, and now I switch to the second subject. Namely, I'm going to show you that... Excuse me?
L is the number of physical
blue lines? Yes. It's just number of those fields which are transversely parallelized. Yes. When I said good, it means that I'm taking my gauge theory, I'll quantize the light cone. I separate the fields into good and bad components. I exclude bad components through the equation of motion, and I'm formulating my operator instead of the good, which means dynamically independent transversely parallelized gluons. So these are L.
And the quarks are also
the four quarks are just taken upper part of the Dirac fermion. So I just done this QCD on the light cone, and what I'm going to do till the rest of my talk, I want to show you that there is another much more profound phenomenon, namely that now the degradability holds in QCD a completely different limit. And this limit is is well known for more than 40 years, namely its Reggio limit. 2 days ago we have heard talk about this Reggio limit, and now I just want to first to refresh you what we know about this limit and what I attempt to describe in QCD. So we know since the 60s that if you measure hadronic scattering amplitude at very large energies, so scatter hadrons NAB at energies which are much larger than any other scale in your disposal, either masses or momentum transferred, you know that this amplitude grows the power. And then if you believe to the Reggio theory allows you to explain this behavior through the exchange of some Reggio trajectory. So for each given Reggio trajectory, you have the following contribution. You have contribution of the Reggio trajectory, which grows as a power in the exponent, which is Reggio trajectory. And here you have 2 prefactors, which is just a residue of this Reggio pole on 2 scattering objects. And now, everybody knows, there were early attempts to explain this Reggio behavior, which gave rise to the dual model. So namely, if you Kalban Reggie behavior with sort of annihilation channel, finally you will find there is sort of possibility to construct sort of hadronic strings, but once you start talking about hadronic string seriously, a quantum field series, there is big trouble. And in some sense, the final goal of QCD is just to construct what's put in here as a question mark. Well, this object here is highly perturbative, and there is no way at the present how we could understand what's inside. Still, there is attempts to describe this high energy behavior using perturbative QCD. And the basic idea is that you start with perturbation theory and you try to find the source, whether it's possible to explain at all, that QCD scattering amplitude could grow to the power, given that in order perturbation theory you have only logarithms. And the first constructive approach has been proposed by this gentleman, and his observation was that if you start with perturbative expansion for cross-section of two objects A and B, which you treat as perturbative hadrons, so-called, then you will end up with perturbation theory expansion, which goes in powers of this parameter, and then they manage to sum this series and find the behavior, which nowadays is called as Bethkell-Pomeroy. So what you're going to find is this number alpha of p, it will be a function of coupling constant. And this function is a very special one. Let me briefly remind you how this Bethkell-Pomeroy appears. So you start with Feynman diagrams, but you realize there's many of them. Then there is very non-trivial way how you could rearrange Feynman diagrams in such a way that we're talking about generalized ladder diagrams. So these diagrams are effective diagrams. Namely, you're using resummation of a certain number of corrections to represent the final result in the following form. So here you have normal gluons, horizontal line. And vertical lines, the so-called Regis gluons. Regis gluons, roughly speaking, could be sort of as gluon dressed by virtual correction. And then you have here vertices, which are not just QCD vertices, just effective QCD vertices. So then what you have to do, you have to resum these diagrams over all possible number of rungs. So each rung brings you logarithms of the energy, and after you sum them, you will find that it's almost exponentiate. So up to this denominator, you have exponential dependence on log of s, which means that you have power in s. And this number here, follow to this magical number, just intersected by Bethkell-Pomeroy. So what we will see just in a few minutes, this number is nothing else as a ground state energy on very special integrable model. So then, but as we already have heard a few days ago, if you're just thinking about this behavior, it cannot be just a full answer, simply because the corresponding cross-section grows with large energy unrestrictively, and therefore it violates unitarity bounds. So therefore, you have to put here something more to restore the unitarity. And there is an approach which was initiated many years ago by different people, which roughly speaking goes as follows. So you start with Bethkell-Pomeroy, and then you ask yourself the question, what will be the minimal set of the correction which I will have to add to this guy to have the final expression which will be unitary in the S channel? And then it turned out that for this, it's enough just to iterate the diagrams. Namely, here you have just two Regis gluons exchanged in key channel. But once you apply unitary constraints, you will see that you have to add arbitrary number of gluons, Regis gluons, in some of here number. So here the summation starts with two because just single gluon has color charge, and here you have to exchange something which has total color charge equal to zero. So in this way, you arrive at the problem of summing such diagrams where you have double summation. So you have summation with respect to number of vertical lines from with respect to capital N, and this N will be translated later to number of sides of your integrable chain model. And then you have summation with respect to number of the horizontal guy. So each of the horizontal guy brings you logarithms. So then if you want to extract the leading behavior of this guy for large energies, you will find that you have to restrict yourself to so-called multi-regi kinematics. So this K stands here for the momentum, for example, of one of these gluons, horizontal line. Then you will find that in order for this diagram to bring leading contribution in S, you have to impose the following constraints. So you introduce rapidity, which is just logarithms of the ratio of a little in plus and minus component, and then you will see that once you go from upper gluons to lower, you have very strong ordering with respect to rapidity, which allows you sort of think about this rapidity of these guys as sort of effective time which emerges in T-channel. And this will be the time which will be just our quantum mechanical time. Still, you have to integrate with respect to remaining two-dimensional transverse component. And here you have just random walk. You have to really take seriously this configuration, integrate over all values of k. And this problem which makes the calculation difficult. So now, when you look for this diagram, you just rotated it 90 degrees, and you realize that here, talking about elastic scattering of energized gluons. So you have these n vertical lines. What this guy do? They're propagating in T-channel and have pairwise interaction. So the corresponding degrees of freedom are just two-dimensional transverse momenta, and you treat here repeated for the time. So this is you reduce number of degrees of freedom, and there's no surprise that you will now come with quantum mechanical model. You do one step forward, namely you go to multicolor limit. And once you do multicolor limit, you see that the all possible exchange between these vertical guides, you have to restrict yourself to planar diagram, which means you're talking about diagrams which have topology of cylinder. And then if you think about cylinder, it's just your string theory. What you have here, you have just sort of closed loop propagating into channel. So the time of propagation is defined by your rapidity, logarithms of S. And what you have here is Hn is just Hamiltonian, which tells you how strong they interact with each other. So given that Y is logarithms of energy, you immediately realize that this cylinder diagram is just S in the power with just this non-trivial Hamiltonian, which describes here interaction. So therefore, if you want to extract the linear energy behavior of this guy, what you have to do, you have to solve Schrödinger equation for this operator. So after you solve the Schrödinger equation, you arrived at the equation which has this name, Bandes-Pichinsky-Paschalowicz equation, which is just like nothing else, just two-dimensional Schrödinger equation for the system of n interacting particles. So again, it's two-dimensional because it's only transverse degrees of freedom which are relevant here, and the number of these guys is just the number of Rejazz gluons. So if you manage to solve this equation, you will extract these numbers, energies, you extract the corresponding wave function, and then once you expand this operator over eigenstates of this operator, you will find scattering amplitude given by the following sum. So this factor here is just this factor when you replace Hamiltonian by its energy. This beta is just the coupling of this wave function to the scattering objects. And here you have a sum over n, which is just number of these vertical lines in your cylinder. So now, once you have the sum, it's clear that the bigger will be the energy, the more dominant will be the contribution. Therefore, if you want to extract high energy behavior of this guy, what is really interesting is to find the maximum energy. And if you change the signs of the energy, it will be ground state, the corresponding quantum mechanical model. So therefore, from the point of view of Regge physics, what is interesting is finding maximal energy of n gluons, which appear as solution to this Schrödinger equation. And now the miracle that this Schrödinger equation is integrable. First of all, you realize that once you go to multicolor limit, you have pairwise interaction replaced by nearest neighbor interaction. So this just becomes certain integral operator, and it's just Bethkin kernel because it was the same interaction which you had at the level of Bethkin Pomeron. And now you have explicit expression of this guy, and it's possible to show that there is this certain hidden conserved charges whose number is large enough for the Hamiltonian to be completely integrable. And then you could go on, you could identify what this Hamiltonian is. And then you could show explicitly this Hamiltonian, this guy here, just psi function. And if it's psi function, you go back to my transparency, you just look into Heisenberg spin chain and match it to this expression, you realize this Hamiltonian is SL2C Heisenberg spin chain. So number of sides of this chain is just number of Rejazz gluons. The corresponding spin operators are generators of very special a reducible principal series representation of this group. And then what you have to do, you just have to apply beta and zas or whatever to find the spectrum. So what was known so far? So again, I told you that what we're interested in, we're interested in to find maximal energy En or ground states with Hamiltonian opposite sign. So what was known, back to 78, the same people, BFK, they found the exact expression for energy of two gluon states, just four log two. So it took only 20 years to calculate the energy of the state built out of three gluons. And this state goes under the name of the Ray Oderon. So there are two different solutions which are existing in the market. One of them belongs to Yannick and Wosik, which has negative value. Another belongs to the gentleman, which has value equal exactly to zero. So now we ask yourself, okay, it took only 20 years to calculate these numbers, but in principle, what you have to do, you have to sum over all n's, knowing explicit dependence of this guy on n. So you expect another 100 years, right? But at that moment, you just realize what the full glory of integrable model. So let me first, how much time do we have?
10 minutes.
So let me first just give you definition of this SL2C Heisenberg spin chain. I will show you next its exact solution. So first of all, once you map QCD scattering amplitude into certain integrable models, just making this dictionary. So namely, now what you're talking about this plane, which is just plane of two-dimensional transverse coordinates of the gluons. And then you map each of the Rejazz gluons into a point. And then to each point, you associate certain spin operator. to this, you introduce holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on the dimensional plane, and then you associate with each particle the following differential operator. This differential operator will be my spin operator, which I associate with each gluon. And then, so these spin operators are just generators of the projected transformation along z and z bar direction of the dimensional plane. And then what you will find that it turned out as a miracle that after you expressed your Bethkel kernel in terms of this variable z and z bar, the full Hamiltonian split into some of two Hamiltonians acting separately along z and z bar direction. So now you go one step further and you'd like to identify this integrable model, namely what to construct R matrix and out of R matrix construct the Hamiltonian. It turned out that this problem, this model is very special because you're talking about very special representation of this L2C group, which doesn't have highest weight. And for such representations, the R matrix has not been known to based on my knowledge. So we will look for this problem, and here becomes the solution to the Young-Baxter equation. So if you go to the solution of the Young-Baxter equation for this particular model, you'll find that here is the answer. So then you do one step further, namely you identify two-particle integrable Hamiltonian as logarithmic derivative of this R matrix for very special value of the spectral parameter. And then what you'll find that finally after logarithmic derivative, you end up with the psi function, and then it turns out that exactly the same expression you find from QCD. So in this way, you matched QCD expression, which you obtained by Feynman diagram calculation, into expression which came from this particular R matrix. And once you have R matrix identified your model, it's just a question of technicality to construct conserved charges. So here's the conserved charges for the system with energized gluons. They're given by differential operators of the order which is just less than n. So you have everything in your disposal, you have conserved charges, you have Hamiltonian. You do one step further, you'd like to solve this problem with this Hamiltonian. And then you run into the problem because since this representation infinite dimensional doesn't have highest weight, the Bethmann satz is not applicable. So what you do, you switch to more sophisticated methods. And here is the name of these two methods. One of the methods was proposed many years ago by Baxter, and second method, which goes under the name separation of variables, has been developed by Sklyanin. So it turned out that you could apply these two methods to this particular model, and it gives you the exact solution. So as I told you, the first step to do, you have just to solve special equation. And this is called Baxter equation. So here is the equation. So if you put here n equal to 3, which will correspond to this limit when I have 3 Lagrange gluons, you realize that this is exactly the same equation we found it for the QCD on the light cone. The only difference that you here you're talking not about SL2R, SL2C. And this difference translates into just only one property, namely, you require that Q of U, which satisfies this equation, is not polynomial, as it was before, but meromorphic function which prescribe analytical properties on your plane. So these two statements are equivalent to saying that you know how to quantize conserved charges, and you know how the energy of the Hamiltonian depends on this Q2 and Q1. It becomes sort of complicated functions which you could find as logarithmic derivative of this guy. So then it took another half a year to solve a rising quantization condition and to reconstruct the spectrum. And here's what you have. So we reconstructed the exact spectrum of this guy for n from 2 to 8, and here just I give you in this table the result for the ground states. So here you have n number of Regis gluons, 2, 3, and we have up to 8, but I simply didn't have space to put here. So here you have conserved charges, and here you have the corresponding ground state energy. So this number here just for loop 2, this number here is the number which was obtained by Janicki-Wosik, and here is just new prediction, and here you have corresponding conserved charges, so just some number. But you will appreciate these numbers if you put them here, and here you see some structure appearing. So here is the energy of corresponding, maximum energy corresponding in region state, the function of number of particles. So here for log 2, here has negative number, and here is dependence. So you see that for even and odd n, the behavior is different. So for odd n, the energy is negative, which means the scattering amplitude dies out. And for even n, it's positive, which means that scattering amplitude grows. Now you see that once you go to large n, both curves approach the same value, which is 0. Which means that if I think that there is a thermodynamical limit, I'm about to conclude that for n to infinity, this energy will approach 0, which translates to the fact that corresponding intercept, which is associated with cylinder diagram, is 1. And again, this limit is not understood. I mean, this is just best guess. And then you look for the literature and you realize that this behavior is known more than 30 years. And this behavior has been predicted by Veneziano using all-day hadronic string. And his argument goes as follows. So let's think about our scattering amplitude using topological expansion. So you have scattering A and B, which are white objects, and then you develop sort of the diagrammatic technique. So the linear contribution, a larger number of colors, just a linear exchange between the two. Then you have one loop corrections, which has suppression of 1 over C squared, et cetera, et cetera. So now we're talking about the linear diagram, so we retain only this guy here. And then what I do, I realize that I could construct my cylinder with sort of closed ring by gluing together two sheets. So, but then if I have two sheets at my disposal, I impose bootstrap. Namely, I'm saying that if I take two sheets and I glue along the one side, I bow to get the same sheet back. So now if I translate this into Reggie behavior, namely you associate with this sheet behavior, which is S in some power, which you think is trajectory corresponding to this open string, you will find, for example, that here you have S power alpha r coming from this guy, S power alpha r coming from this guy, and then through the unitary cut, you're losing one power of S. So from left-hand side, you're having behavior S power 2 alpha r minus 1, and you, when you're equating to this, you're saying it's the same as L power alpha r. From this, you include that alpha r equal to 1. So the intercept corresponding to this open sheet is just 1. But then you repeat the same exercise here, so you have two sheets gluing together along two cuts, so you have S power alpha r for one sheet, the same for another, and 1 of S on the unitary cut, and you cut with the prediction that Pomeron, which described by this cylinder, its intercept should be equal to alpha r minus 1. So putting alpha r equal to 1, you give the alpha p equal to 1. So these are the only string interpretations that I found so far, and here I'm coming to my conclusion. So we see that if you start with QCD and you're going to do different limit, you find that the same structure emerges. So if you start with a common semantic equation for the local operator on the light cone, you will find that they become completely integrable if you go to large conformal spins to loops. If you don't require this condition, then at least at one loop level, you have integrability in special sectors. So now you go completely different limit, which is high energy limit, and you find still integrability is there. And then what I'd like to emphasize is that in both cases, you have the same integrable structure. It's just the same spin chain, with only difference that you have just to change the group corresponding to the spins. And this identification is powerful enough to allow us to predict the exact spectrum of the anomalous dimension and spectrum of the Regi states. But the most important question, which we don't understand, is where this integrability comes from. And this should be the question which I would like to finish my talk. Thank you.
Questions? Questions? Beautiful talk. I just wanted to add that since I like to talk about light front wave functions, they're defined from the Hamiltonian quantized on the light cone. So I don't like to use the argument of infimentum because that's sort of old-fashioned. Okay. But this means, in fact, that you can take the valence light front wave functions, integrate over transverse momentum, and you get exactly the distribution amplitudes. Mm-hmm. And that's, in fact, what you described. Mm-hmm. But you didn't say anything about the fact that you actually predict the polynomial forms associated with the leading anomalous dimensions.
Yes,
or you barely said it.
Well, I didn't want to go into technicalities, but roughly speaking, so I was mostly talking about anomalous dimension.
Right.
So you could translate, once you know the spectrum of your QCD Hamiltonian, let's say on the light cone, evolution kernel, let us say, right, then the eigenvalues give you anomalous dimension, eigenfunction allow you to construct conformal operators for which you deduce the corresponding wave function, distribution amplitude.
Right.
And then conformal symmetry together with integrability allows you to describe almost analytically the structure of the distribution amplitude for baryons, which holistic three-halves one half.
Exactly.
And then for one half, you see that due to breaking integrability, you're generating mass gap. And this mass gap due to the confining of the quark and the quark with opposite helicities into bound state, which is scalar diquark.
Exactly.
And these are just consequences of breaking of integrability.
So in fact, just to reinforce that point, not only do we know that, but we also know the K-perp falloff of the light front wave functions, which gives you a complete, large spectrum now of phenomenological things you can compute using the conformal symmetry and the ADS CFT analog.
So you use unitarity as a reason to go from two gluons to n gluons in some overall cylinders, but the result is still just as non-unitary because you still have S to a large positive, to a positive power greater than one. So what do you see as eventually unitarizing? I mean, do you think that just summing ladders of cylinders is enough?
If you're translating what I have shown here into all these registered language, what I'm talking about Bayer Pomeron. So when you start talking about this topological expansion, so once you know what cylinder is here, so the whole sum here is unitary. What I was talking about this diagram.
Yes.
And I'm describing this diagram as infinite sum of the cylinder formed by the gluons. So if you want to interact the whole cross-section, you cannot interact the cross-section in multicolor limit. Interaction will go some Laplanar corrections. But this Laplanar correction will correspond in this language to the interaction between those cylinders. So in this way, you identify cylinder as an elementary state, and then you start talking about interaction between those states. And then you could ask other questions. So if I know that the degradability is here, what will happen with the degradability if you start talking about interaction? And then there is very strong indication that the degradability is preserved. Not only preserved, that this interaction, which corresponds to triple Pomeron vertex, triple Pomeron vertex itself could be identified as a correlation function in certain conformal field theory. But we don't, I don't want to go into detail, but I could explain it later.
More question.
I'm a little confused by what you mean by integrability in QCD. It seems to me that you're looking at an approximation to QCD, and that approximation is what is integrable. Is that correct? Do you expect that the entire theory is integrable?
Could it be? I didn't hear the question.
See, when you talk about the integrability in QCD, are you implying somehow that the entire theory of QCD is integrable, or that your approximation to it is integrable?
Well, as I said, I started with QCD, and I'm considering the limit of QCD. It's not limit of QCD. I'm talking about very special object. In one case, we're talking about green function of the operator built out of the fundamental field from the light cone. And then I'm asking myself, how this object, which sort of physical states, so you have vacuum, you apply to the vacuum your operators built out of these guys, and you have a certain physical state in QCD. And I'm asking myself, how these states will evolve if I start changing normalization scale? And then what I'm saying, it will evolve with certain Hamiltonian, which is predicted from QCD Lagrangian, which...
Okay. I thought you were using the dilatation operator within some approximation.
Okay, let me come back to... So, I have to come back to... So you're perfectly right that integrable models that we identified here, it was obtained at one loop level. So we just change, you just take multi-particle operator here, for example, take this operator here. So at one loop level, you have just one gluon exchange between any pair. So now you ask, so what will happen if you go to two loop? So if you go to two loop, there are things to worry about. You have breaking of conformal symmetry, which means beta function will be part of your evolution kernel. So you don't have conformal symmetry anymore. Still, the corresponding dilatation operator is integrable. I could preserve the conserved charge, which is commutes with two-loop Hamiltonian.
In the early days of classical mechanics,
yes,
people observed, this is the so-called Birkhoff procedure. That essentially all the Birkhoff procedure in the early days of classical mechanics, the idea was that in fact any system is integrable, classical mechanics,
yes,
if you look at it order by order in classical perturbation theory. The difference between truly integrable and chaotic systems is that the perturbation series does not converge in the case of chaotic systems. I mean, this is the observation that eventually led to the KAM theory. So I'm not sure that you can make statements about integrability of a theory by looking at one or two orders of perturbation theory.
No, I'm the only statement that I made, that the Hamiltonian, the evolution kernel-driven dependence of this guy on the normalization scale is integrable to two-loop order. I'm not saying about all-loop expression. I just said explicitly about two-loop order. And the degradability of two-loop order is a very defined statement.
More questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.